You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
Back in the day, and I'm talking about thousands of years ago, when God was dealing with the Israelis, you know, the Hebrews, as his nation, that's people that he created, formed out of Abraham. And when he blessed them, it would rain because the crops would grow and stuff, and there were areas known for famine. So give you a little bit about that. But a lot of times you look, go through the history of the Hebrews and stuff, and it's, it seems like God is really ruling with an iron fist. But there is a story that shows God's true nature, and it has to do with Aram and the king of Aram and the fact that he was always warring against Israel. Imagine that. Can't imagine why. I mean, Israel's not doing anything. They're just there. And he's like, I'm coming against him. But the thing is, every time he would, they'd march in, you know, in the middle of the night, and the sun would come up and stuff. And then the Israel army would be there, and they would be like, okay, let's just back away. Nothing's going to, nobody gets hurt, you know. And that happened every time. And he really was incensed. And he called all of his generals together, and he said, all right, you know, who's telling the Israelites what we're doing? Who's the inside guy? Boy, you didn't want to be that guy, not in that day. Mm-mm. And they all said, no, it's none of us. It's none of us. It's Elisha. They have a prophet. That's how well known he was. They have a prophet of God, and he tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom. That's how much he knows. That's what he was saying. And he said, well, okay then, let's get the whole army together. We go get him. The next day, after they've all assembled at night and stuff, the servant of Elisha gets up, goes out, probably on a porch or something, looks out, and he's stretching, you know, opens his eyes good, and there's the entire army of Aaron stretched out, and he's like, oh boy, and he runs back inside. You know, it's the stuff that in movies, you know, but it's really happened. And he wakes Elisha up. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We're surrounded. We're done for. You know, and he's very afraid. And Elisha says, don't be afraid. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And the look he got must have been astounding. Because, you know, that looked like, are we on the same planet here? And Elisha prayed to God, Lord, open his eyes so he may see. And his eyes were opened. And what he saw was the heavenly army, chariots of fire and horses surrounding them, made them look puny in comparison. And he realized, we got this. God's got this. Amazing. So Elisha goes down as the army is coming forward. They had got no idea. And he asked God again. Now, he knew this is what God wanted to do. And he asked God to make them blind, and he did. They all went blind, and he told them. He lied to them because he said, oh, General, this isn't where you want to be. You're on the wrong road. I'll lead you down the right road. Here, follow me. And of course, he didn't have any choice. They couldn't see anything anymore. And so they went down, and when they opened their eyes, he prayed, Lord, open their eyes. And they did, and they were surrounded by the entire Israelite army. And boy, they thought, whoa, we've had it. This is it. Just, you know, kill us now. And the Israelite, of course, wanted to know. The commander said, hey, shall we kill them now? You know, and Elisha said, no. Feed them. Give them a meal. They actually gave them a banquet. And it shows you God's mercy. And, of course, they just were probably stunned by that, as anybody would be. And the people, anybody learning about that story would be. Great feast, it's been described as in the Bible. And they finished eating and drinking, and they went away. Go away. Go now. Going back to Aram, wherever you go. Right? So they went on back, and that was it. There was peace. They stopped raiding Israel from that time forward. And nobody's ever heard of them again. And it started cover dish things at church or something. No, not.
It's Cup of Joe Morning Show.
With Joe Hunter.
I'm just getting warmed up.
The Sound of Life.
I learned something over the weekend about the Pharisees. And, of course, if you know anything about Jesus, his words to the Pharisees were very sharp, poignant, to the point. He called them a brood of vipers. It's not a compliment. Mainly because of what had happened, what had become. And you're talking about men who knew the Scripture so well that, from what I understand, they would take a square that would represent a page of the scroll of the Bible, basically, which was in scroll form, and they would throw a dart, and then somebody would look on the other side. The letter that the dart hit, they would tell them, and then they were expected to recite the verse complete, or, you know, the verse that letter was in on that scroll in that part of Scripture. And they did it. That's how well they knew the Scripture. Did they know the one it was talking about? You know, I mean, how many times did they look at the prophets in Jeremiah and Isaiah? And here it was being fulfilled right in front of them. Wow-wee. It's pretty amazing. I think it is. To be a nobody that cares nothing except the world know about Jesus. That's somebody. That's worthy cause. Call right there. It really is.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The Sound of Life.
A man named Bob, known as the Bob the Bike Guy right now, over in Massachusetts and Connecticut, there are now over 1,200 children who now have a bicycle that would not have a bicycle before. And it all came about, I mean, Bob has been socially active for years. I mean, I think for 14 years he has taught people sign language. He's worked with children and things, and so they it didn't come as a big shock to him that he would get a call one day asking if he or anybody he knows would be able to repair some bicycles. It just so happened that he had been diagnosed with a debilitating brain disease. You heard that right. Getting worse and worse, really, with this brain disorder, a neurodegenerative brain disease, just starts breaking down. And so, he got this call and he thought, boy, you know, they're children, because he'd been in these circles before, they could really use a bicycle that would never really get one. And, he went to Vermont and started the application process for a program called Death with Dignity, and it was during that process that he got a call, really, a guidance counselor from a local school back home asked him if he had any bikes he could donate to the it's a pre-K program for children, low-income families, and, of course, he, not being a stranger to community work, he thought, well, it's okay. He had a friend that drove out of the Adirondacks 3.5 hours to come down and visit me in Vermont, he said, you know what? You can do a lot more with your life. He said, I thought I had done it all. But this calling to come and just fix bikes, I don't know. He said, it just flipped the switch in me some way, and I'm glad I did. I never looked back. And now he is mobilizing people, as what happens so often of times, people coming together. You know, he says, I never have one of those woe is me days. I'm not going to do that, because I know every day I can get up with purpose and make a difference. And he hopes this organization will continue changing lives in his community and beyond when he's gone. He said, my wife and I had a meeting with our volunteers a couple of weeks ago when I left the doctors again. He said, you know, things are just going to continue to get worse. I looked at every one of them, every single one of them promised that they would keep this going long after I'm gone. That's what you do. Look them in the eye. You promise. For now, it's those smiles, those laughs from kids when I see the new bike that's just for them that just keeps him going. The thing he does, he mobilizes policemen, too. And so they've got it all picked out in the school and the kids that'll go, and they've got the bikes all ready, and the police come roaring in with their sirens going and things like that, and the kids get all ramped up and charged up and everything, you know. And he said they come out and they look and they're all sitting there wondering which one I'm going to get and stuff. He said you should just really see the look in their eyes, the joy on their faces. He said it just really, really, just really lights him up. He said, I think it will keep making a difference. It doesn't just make a difference in the people's lives that we serve or give to. It makes a difference in our lives.
The Sound of Life.
Seems like Jennifer sitting in her job interview after college was totally nonsensical. A technology consulting firm actually hired her, she said. Although she couldn't write a line of computer code, had very little business knowledge, during the interview process for her entry-level position, she learned that the company did not place a high value on work experience, which she's thinking, well, that's a good thing, because I ain't got any. Instead, personal qualities, such as the ability to solve problems creatively, exercise good judgment, and work well with a team, were more important. The company figured that new workers could be taught the necessary skills. It's true. It's like learning to drive a new car, a piece of equipment. You can learn that in a relatively short period of time. The things that they're talking about are inside. Yeah, that takes a lot longer to change. As long as you had the necessary, you could learn the necessary technical skills, you know, if you were the kind of people that the company's looking for. God did the same thing. You don't believe me? Noah didn't have the right resume for the job of constructing an ark, did he? Well, really, who did? But, you know, he wasn't even a boat builder. He wasn't a carpenter. You would think God would be looking for, well, I got to pick somebody that at least knows how to build a boat. I mean, you know, come on, this is big here. No, he picked a farmer, a man who was comfortable with dirt on his shirt and a plow in his hands. And yet, as God decided how to deal with the evil in the world at that time, Noah stood out because, what does the Bible say? Quote, he walked faithfully with God. God valued the teachableness of Noah's heart, the strength to resist the corruption around him and to do what was right. Certainly, he set a pattern for people who really, from time to time, hire people because of those reasons. Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball, was not hired because he was the best black athlete baseball player. There were others who were better than him. He was hired by the owner because the owner knew he was a Christian, and he figured a man with strong convictions it is going to take the insults that get hurled at him. And he almost broke. And, well, Noah did too. Hey, let's face it. It's always close, isn't it? And we may not feel qualified for work. Thankfully, God is not necessarily concerned with your skill, my skill, the prizes. He prizes our character. He prizes our love for him, a willingness to trust him. When these qualities are being developed inside us by the Spirit, he can use us in big or small ways to accomplish his will on earth. A thought from Jennifer Benson Schultz right there as a devotional today on Our Daily Bread. Pretty cool.
Hey, this is Crowder, and you're listening to Cup of Joe Morning Show. It's my favorite. It's how you start your day, and you know, day is going to get better and better.
ESPN came up with this idea some years ago, probably a lot longer than I think, that they would go out on a college game day, well, you know, Saturday college, and they would go out in the morning and start there talking about college football coming up for the day. So what they would do is they would go out on a location at a college that was having a game. And they would sit their studio up outside. And so what happened is, of course, as the weeks go on and the days go on and this thing really catches on, it gets to be quite a hubbub of activity and craziness because college students will come out early in the morning on Saturday and act all wild and crazy for the cameras, right? And hold up signs and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, the guys that are talking about the football act kind of crazy as well. Well, something like this was bound to happen, I guess. One of the 24-year-olds there is holding up a sign pleading for, and I quote, beer money. All right? And he named a company by name, and he thought it was a joke. You know, he just did it like, send money. You know, you always see those signs up there and stuff. Well, what happened was, the thing is, he had his Venmo account listed underneath and his name listed underneath. And so what happened is people started giving like right away. It was $600, I think, right away. And I'm sure that the part that gets left out of a lot of this story is that his mama got a hold of him, you know, and because she knows they're going to be at his university on this particular day. And there he is being a 6-year-old, and she got a hold of him and straightened him right out. And so he said, he announced that he would donate the money because he said, well, I got plenty enough for a case of beer. I'm going to donate the rest of it to the University of Iowa Steed Family Children's Hospital. Wow. And man, the money was coming in. And as when he was on, I guess, a morning television show recently, it was $157,000. He said, I'm going to keep the Venmo account open for donations until the end of the month, as long as they're coming in, you know, and at the end of the month, then I'll write a check to the hospital and go meet some of the kids and do things like that. That's turning out a big donation, and a lot of people from all over the country got in on it, and they know where it's going. The Children's Hospital spokesperson said, our minds are blown by this. And really, I think you could probably thank his mom, maybe. That's just one of those weird things that happen. Because you know good and well when he did it as a joke and then real money started coming in, he was like, oh man, what am I going to do now? You know, and of course he goes back to his mom. What do I do? You know, give it to somebody. This is what we care about. Maybe there's a more of a story behind that as the reason, but they certainly say thank you to everyone who helped. It is a milestone. We are so grateful, of course, and families will be grateful that are there. Just like when you support this ministry that looks to you for support, as I always say, to pay the light bill and the tower rent bill and stuff, you know, as I was thinking myself, I'm kind of, seems like those handmade signs really work. So we've, you know, got our days of joy coming up. I'm going to make a handmade sign and put it out there for everybody to see. Help us keep the right song coming at the right time. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I would love it.
The Sound of Life.
Talking about the very rich man, multi-billionaire. Say he's rich. I mean, you know, it's Robert F. Smith is his name, and he was giving a speech, graduation speech, back in May, and he was awarded an honorary degree from Morehouse College, and he decided then, and he announced, I'm going to pay off the student debt loan of the entire graduating class. They all fainted, I guess. He's serious about that. And he's paying off the debt of the students' parents now as well. He is the founder and CEO of Vista Equity Partners, collectively donating $34 million to New Morehouse College Student Success Program to pay off the loans that students and parents of the class of 2019 accumulated to fund a Morehouse education. Now, some people have been pretty critical of that, as you might imagine, because it's kind of like buying a new car for a 16-year-old that just got their driver's license, some people feel. But the idea is his idea is that they will be grateful and that they will see an attitude of gratitude, really, and pay it forward. It is our hope, he said, that our graduates will use their newfound financial freedom to pursue their career goals, to lead and serve the community, and to remember the spirit of the gift given to them by paying it forward to support the education of future classes of Morehouse men. That's what he said, and I quote, more than 400 students, parents, and guardians of the class of 2019 will receive Morehouse inaugural gift under the Student Success Program. And, of course, it's been in the news lately about college student debt and how much there is and whatnot. So I sincerely hope that that is what happens out of this, and I would imagine that in some cases it will. It's like anything else that deals with human nature. You know, any pastor can tell you that as a shepherd of a group of people, you know, a flock, if you will. They're wandering all over the place at times. So I'm sure that some will, but maybe that act will create more generosity and more paying it forward than they anticipated. That's what I hope. You know, we'll see. The proof is in the pudding, right?
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the Sound of Life.
Talking about a slave owned by Moses and Susan Carver being stolen, and her two children were, and they searched and searched, and they only found the baby. And the baby was named George, who really grew up being very inquisitive, to say the least, memorized Bible verses, always pursued education despite obstacles to black men at the time. I'm talking about George Washington Carver. You should know intimately who he is. He should be one of your heroes. He became one of the best known African Americans of his era into the 1900s. Thousands of agricultural inventions to his name. In fact, one of the big things about the South, now this is so godlike, it's incredible, because here is a man born into slavery, and yet he revolutionized the economy of the South. They planted cotton over and over and over and over and over again in the same fields because he'd make money, but it just depleted the fields. And he showed them how to plant modern agricultural techniques. He had a better diet. He made all kinds of stuff out of the peanut, but not peanut butter. which a lot of people think is what he's known for. But he so revolutionized the economy of the South that they formed a committee in Washington, a Senate committee, as far as I understand it right, and they wanted to talk to him. And they invited him up, and they gave him like 10 minutes. And he started talking, and they listened for a couple of hours. He's a fascinating man. And he knew, because of his study of God, he had an appreciation of God's creation. I'm talking thousands of agricultural inventions to his name. Just absolutely incredible. He worked at Tuskegee University, that's where he passed away in the 1940s. He was there for probably 20 years. He organized Bible classes on campus. You'll find a lot about that, maybe. He focused on a specific text. Students recalled his reminder from the first chapter of Genesis, and I quote, "Not one of all the millions of things that God made was left until it was pronounced very good." What an example. And what an example of a man who took, in the midst of his enemies, just like God did with the armies of Aram, and just kept coming after Israel, coming after him. And finally, when they had him and they could have just wiped him out, he gave him a banquet and sent him home. And they were stunned. And they were like, oh, okay. And they just never had a reason to go fight against Israel again, you know. But George Washington Carver was a man of great wisdom because of the Bible. And I think they asked him about going into his lab, and he said, the only book I take into my lab is the Bible. And he said, I figure, you know, I ask God to show me, and he does. And boy, did he ever. I mean, it's just an amazing, the hundreds of products using the peanuts. Sweet potato was another one. Soybeans, I think he's the one that had them plant soybeans instead of the cotton all the time. It's just absolutely incredible. He was known as the plant doctor, even as a child. So look him up, find out more about him, put his picture up, and don't worship him. Just, you know, just admire him right there. He once said, education is the key to unlock the golden door of freedom. When you do the common things in life in an uncommon way, you will command the attention of the world. Where there is no vision, there is no hope. Brilliant man, George Washington Carver.
Hey, this is Drew from We Are Messengers, and thank you for listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
I was reading about a 10-year-old, Ryan King, has never let her wheelchair stop her from doing anything. So many people like that. It's amazing. It's almost, you know, like Jason Gray was talking about having a handicap, if you will, a disability, I guess, in a speech impediment. And actually, God has used him in a bigger way than he would have normally. Ryan is a spitfire, says his mom. She was telling the news people. And his fourth grade, spina bifida, birth defect that causes a deformity in the spine, often results in paralysis, plays golf, dances ballet. She participated in pageants and done fashion shows, even making it all the way to Chicago Fashion Week. Her face appears on a billboard in her hometown in Kentucky. Everyone in Louisville loves her, but a recent school field trip to a rugged fossil bed by a river was inaccessible by wheelchair or by her, and it was looking like it was going to be the one thing that she wasn't going to be able to do until somebody stepped in, yes, indeedy, you know, and decided, I will carry her all the way through. So it's really pretty cool. Her teacher carried the student with spina bifida during the outdoor field trip. And I was thinking, you know, she wouldn't have been able to do it. And she's thinking, man, there's nothing that I can't do. I really tried to do this. And we're talking about, you know, 90 degree weather. She weighs like over 50 pounds. And, you know, he had to do it if she was going to be there. And sometimes I think, as much as we do on our own, we like to do things on our own, don't we? That's kind of human nature. There's going to come that thing where we're going to realize we can't do it because we have limitations no matter what or who we are. I don't care whether we're a triathlete, you know, or a person with spina bifida. I mean, we can do a ton of stuff that we set our mind to, but there's going to be something that we can't do. And that's kind of a picture of how God is there to carry us through whatever it is. Maybe it's physical, maybe it's spiritual.
The sound of life.
God is working through the sound of life. And we know that because our friends let us know, one way or the other, about what God is doing through the sound of life and music and word. And here's a really good example of that. We thank you for letting us know what God is doing through this radio station. This testimony is very powerful. However, it is not safe for the little ears, just to let you know. All right? Thank you.
It was April 1998, and I had just found out that my daughter was being sexually abused by her father, my ex-husband. We had been divorced for 6 years. I was 35 years old, and my daughter was 7. Soon thereafter, she was diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder, which keeps the memories from the abuse locked away in another personality. It will be many years before she remembers the abuse, therefore making it difficult to prosecute her father. The beginning days of this time were filled with the planning for my daughter's safety, me searching for what is the right answer, and feeling as though I don't have the confidence to be making such decisions. I made each hard decision that needed to be made. My daughter's father attempted to remove her from school one day, and the weight of the events and the decisions to be made, always feeling as though, how can I be making these decisions? I have no idea what the right answer is. Working with the police and private counselors, we were able to get through the years of planning for my daughter to be safe. After the incident at the school, we did not have contact with my daughter's father for several years. Periodically, he will try contacting her, but with the help of police, we were able to keep her safe until she was able to remember the abuse. In 2000, I met a wonderful man and we were married. Unknown to me or anyone in his family, he was an alcoholic and not in recovery. I continued my counseling and started attending Al-Anon meetings. I started listening to Christian music in 1998 through our church's newly formed band. It was in 2000 that I began listening to Sound of Life Radio, and it saved my life. I would listen to it as much as I could throughout the day, waking up to it, the ride into work, at lunch, the ride home, anytime I could. It kept me focused on God. How can this hardship be turned into something for good? Something for you, Lord, that is needed to help others. Guide me. Show me which way to travel today, so I may help to fulfill your purpose for me, your will, and to be guided by you. Listening to Sound of Life Radio kept me afloat with the days. I felt as though everything was closing in. I couldn't think. I couldn't take another step. But each day I would awake, listening to the music, and find that courage to get up and deal with the new day. Hearing the songs, the words of so many throughout the years has made me strong, so I can deal with the challenges along my path. It has been several years for my daughter and I. She is safe and continues intensive counseling for the abuse. A few years ago, she did begin to remember and continues with her therapy. I continue to use Sound of Life Radio for my strength. My daughter has married. I retired from teaching and I'm now launching Safe Families for Children. It surrounds families going through crisis with extended like family support for those that do not have family or friends to turn to. Volunteers from Safe Families becomes that family or friend they do not have to help them through the crisis. And we are hoping to launch for the first time this fall. I remember years back when I first started listening. There were many songs by Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, and Casting Crowns that brought me through those challenging days. In recent years, there are also so many artists that have just the right verse, just the right phrase to get me through a difficult time. The one song that stands out is by Hillsong United, Oceans. Spirit, lead me where the trust is without borders. Let me walk upon the waters wherever you would call me. Take me deeper than my feet could ever wander, and my faith will be made stronger in the presence of my Savior. So I will call upon your name and keep my eyes above the waves. When oceans rise, my soul will rest in your embrace. For I am yours, and you are mine. I'm not sure about all that I wrote. It's difficult to write your own story. As I repeatedly turned back to my daughter's story, As I was doing this, I needed to realize what my story was. There are other songs, too, that helped me early on when a lot of this started to hit. And I remember two in particular by Michael W. Smith, Breathe and Let It Rain. I would listen to those songs over and over again when she was young. And many times I had the CD and just playing it over and over again to just lift me up, have trust in the Lord, have trust in Jesus, and know that we are protected by Him. He protected us all these years, continues to protect us, and He's gotten us through these challenging days. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.